Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Tina Sachs. I'm a doctoral candidate at the University of Chicago. Given the fact that I'm a doctoral candidate, I have no financial interest in anything. I'm going to talk a little bit. This is my dissertation work, and I'm going to talk briefly about racial and socioeconomic status disparities in health, a little bit about the theory that I used to explore these topics, the study design, and then obviously the findings. Just to forecast a little bit, this study is really about the intersection of where women actually go in to see their providers. And so I was interested in the extent to which the patient-provider relationship might be a source of healthcare disparities. And so I asked women about what they did to try to mitigate potentially discriminatory treatment in healthcare settings. And what they overwhelmingly told me was that in order to try to get the best treatment possible, they really had to engage in positive self-presentation strategies. And so those are things like dressing a certain way, using certain language, conducting research on your healthcare, on your particular healthcare issue prior to actually going in to see the doctor. And I think just to consider that a little bit, kind of the implications of what that means, that in order to get the best quality treatment, women felt that they really had to do something. They didn't have the expectation that they would get the best treatment necessarily just on its face. And so that's kind of the underlying story of what these data show. So what I was trying to do in my dissertation was really look at African-American women, but particularly middle-class African-American women, because I think particularly in public health and in social welfare, which is the field I'm in, we often study and we often consider that most African-Americans in the literature are considered, usually we think about them as being poor. And obviously there is a large population of African-Americans and other minorities who are not poor, but there's not very much research about those groups. And so I wanted to explore that a little bit more. I wanted to look at what positive self-presentation really meant for these women, and then also to using a qualitative method to try to get into and understand what socioeconomic status really looks like. Particularly in health research and in quantitative studies, we often think of socioeconomic status as often, you know, it's income, it's education, or it's occupation. But sort of what does it really mean in real life? What is really going on, and how do women use their class status to the best of their ability, I guess? So this is just one, again, just to foreground a little bit. This is one quote that a woman told me. This is a woman who had a PhD in divinity, and the first thing she said, and it sort of ties in nicely to the previous presentation where she's talking about the intersection of race and gender stereotyping, and she says that, you know, people first look at her as being inferior because of her gender and then her race, and then she has to work hard to communicate accurately, and that surprises people. She says that she says, I think they get surprised when you demonstrate that you are also a person. So here again, she's really struggling, fighting against some of these stereotypes that she feels affect her before she even, you know, opens her mouth, says a word, that there's some baggage that she carries with her into this encounter, and that she has to really try to work against it. And again, these are just data. I think we all have a good sense of what racial disparities look like, what they really mean, but again, just have this picture here of a woman who's talking to her home health care worker, and just to sort of give us a little bit of a real sense of what this means, that almost 84,000 preventable deaths occur each year because of the black-white mortality gap, and so that this is something that is not just an academic exercise, these are people's real lives. And so what do we know about race and socioeconomic status disparities in health? We know that they're related, they're not interchangeable, but they're not the same thing. That socioeconomic status accounts for a large part of racial differences in health, but not all of it. And that there's an additional burden of race that's linked to poor health, and that's over and above socioeconomic status disparities. And sort of, again, hearkening back to the first presenter, Mr. Harrington, when he's talking about obesity and all of these, chronic health diseases in PG County. PG County is, I think, actually holds the distinction of being the only majority black county in the United States that whose income is above median income, and yet and still we continue to have these kinds of problems. So this is sort of the motivation for my study. And so this is just, again, just to sort of show you some of what these disparities look like. So you can see here in the middle income and in the high income groups, African American women and Latinas continue to have poorer health compared to Caucasian women. And so this is just so that we can see that race and class here are not, they're not as tightly linked as I think we often think. And so what are these healthcare disparities? Again, I'm not going to belabor the point. I think we all have a good sense that oftentimes African Americans don't receive the standard of care once they actually reach the healthcare encounter. And so again, all of the things that happen before you actually get there, your neighborhood, what you eat, all of these things, of course, are huge determinants of health. But there's something else going on. There's something going on once you reach the door of the provider as well. And on the patient side, we know that there are some issues that people carry with them too, of course. So mistrust is, I think, is an issue among African Americans. Not all African Americans, of course. African Americans are not a monolith. But there is some expectation that, among some African Americans, that they will be treated differently, regardless of their class status, once they actually reach the provider. And this is largely due, I would say, to a lot of historic, that this is a deeply rooted skepticism of the medical profession. And I think, unlike, again, what you hear in general about the Tuskegee study, I think this distrust predates the Tuskegee study. I think that's one very important example of the reasons why African Americans distrust the medical profession, but it's by no means the only one. And on the provider side, again, even after controlling for socioeconomic status, physicians tend to see black patients as less likable, and so less intelligent, less able to comply with the treatment protocols. And so this is, again, where you're seeing sort of some of these stereotypes that come into the healthcare encounter. And what is self-presentation? So it's kind of, a relatively commonsensical idea. It took a sociologist at the University of Chicago to come up with this term. But it's a common form of impression management that people use to try to get other people to see them in the best light and to treat them in the way that they want to be treated. There's at least one quantitative study of this in a healthcare setting, in which it was a telephone survey of about 1,200 people. They hypothesized that people with relatively marginalized social status, like low income people, women, minorities, that these groups would actually think it's more important to present themselves positively in a healthcare setting than people who were not members of those groups. And so those are things, again, like what you're wearing, emphasizing your intelligence, emphasizing your occupational status, and so on. So voila, of course, their study confirmed their hypothesis or supported their hypothesis. And they found that African Americans, low-income people, women, older people, were all overwhelmingly more likely to endorse the idea that positive self-presentation was important in a healthcare setting. And so in order to really sort of flesh this out, I went to the literature, of course, and found some really interesting studies. Again, PG County keeps coming up because this book, Blue Chip Black,
right,
was an ethnography of Prince George's
right.
County.
Right.
And the sociologists found that middle and upper middle class African Americans in this area really tried to maneuver their public self-presentation to reduce the likelihood of discriminatory treatment, particularly in public settings. I'm applying this work to healthcare settings. And then Sister Citizen is a book that really explores the pervasive stereotyping of African American women that are based on, of course, a racialized sort of femininity that African American women are judged upon. So what did I do? I talked to, I conducted two focus groups, one with lower middle class women and one with upper middle class women. I did semi-structured in-depth interviews, and I also used the vignette technique. And I analyzed these data using a grounded theory method. I recruited people from all over the place. I begged. I asked people to please talk to me, and I put flyers all over the city of Chicago, and I got about 30 people. One thing that was very important to me about this study was that I wanted to make sure that there was variation in terms of what we think of typically as class. And so I asked women to, I included women in the study who had a household income of $50,000 or more, a bachelor's degree or more, who owned their own home or were in a white-collar or entrepreneurial profession. What that actually did in the study was it included some people who had different permutations of those characteristics. So I have one woman in the study who was actually a high school dropout but was an entrepreneur and made over $100,000 a year. So when you think about class, and you're talking about this in quantitative studies, you sort of wonder, okay, where does she fit in this designation of socioeconomic status? And that's one of the things that I was trying to kind of play with a little bit in the study. I don't actually have time to kind of go into that any further, but that is something that in the chapters in the dissertation I develop. This is just a chart of the demographics of the people who were included in the study, and there was a range across all of the different dimensions that I mentioned, and the average age was about 48. This is the one for the upper middle class group, and I think I'm kind of, how am I doing on time? Okay, so I'm going to hurry up. I had some variation. That's the take-home point. So what I asked them is, in order to get the best treatment possible, how important do you think it is to do the following things? And these are the things that I mentioned previously. Overwhelmingly, the respondents, their answers fell into these kind of conceptual domains. They felt it was really important, the way they dressed and their personal grooming was important. The connection to the healthcare provider was overwhelmingly important to them, as well as doing research prior to the encounter. These were the things that were across all of the women that they felt were the most important domains that were the most salient to them. And I think, very importantly, there was not a single person in the study who indicated that this was not important. They all agreed that this was something that was very important to do. So the way I kind of think about this is that they often talked about this positive self-presentation as a form of self-advocacy that led to high-quality treatment. So for many of them, it was something that was they thought of it very positively, that I have this education at my disposal, I have this particular skill set, and so I'm able to do this when I go to the provider. Others of them indicated that they were hyper-vigilant during the encounter, that they're constantly monitoring the situation, what's going on, how is this going, are they withholding something from me, are they telling me something that, you know, what is going on here? So there's this hyper-awareness all the time, which for many of them was incredibly burdensome. So one woman describes here her experience with trying to look a certain way when she goes to the doctor. And she is really talking about, I think, the pride that she has, that even if she's sick, she goes to the doctor and she tries to make sure she looks, you know, that she pulls herself together. But what she's getting at here, I think, that sort of the undercurrent of this, she says, you know, if I took the time to get myself together, I wasn't as sick. No. My mother told me always to have something together. I think what she's alluding to here, though, is the fact that she doesn't feel the safety enough to be vulnerable, to just walk into that doctor's office looking crazy. You know, she doesn't feel that. And so that's something that I think the undercurrent of a lot of these data. Another person talks about the fact that you have to get the person to see you as an individual, not as a piece of meat, see your cares, your concerns, and that she's her own best advocate for her health care. And this is important in that she feels empowered by the fact that she can speak up for herself, but also that there is a lot of work that's going on during this relationship that may or may not be a good thing. This is a woman who talked very, very strongly about the need to conduct research prior to going to the doctor. This was a 35-year-old woman who for 15 years had suffered with chronic knee pain, and she went to doctor to doctor to doctor. Everyone just told her, it's really because you're fat and you need to lose weight, and that's what your problems are. And it turned out that she finally got someone to give her an MRI, and it turned out she had two tumors in her knee that had been growing for 15 years. She almost lost her leg. And as a result of that, she was really determined to do a lot of research prior to the healthcare encounter to try to advocate for herself. So she talks about using certain words that will tip them off to the fact that they know she's done this research. Again, just to indicate the amount of the pressure that a lot of women feel in these settings to be proactive, that the onus is on them, I feel like it's all on me. And I think what these data sort of taken together, what they're suggesting is that we all know that the healthcare environment is there's a lot of time pressure. Physicians don't have a lot of time. There are all of these external forces impinging on this relationship. And I think for women who may also have women for whom there are a lot of stereotypes about who they are, this time pressure can make this relationship with the provider potentially very fractious. This is a woman, and almost finished now, a woman who had bunion surgery. And again, this is just to indicate the how difficult she felt this was, that she had to ask all of the questions, that the physician was not necessarily going to let her know everything that was important to know about it. And she says, you know, they didn't explain that. I thought I didn't have to ask because it was simple. I didn't think to ask, and so I blame myself for not asking to this day. So again, this is she's really carrying this with her, and I think a lot of people, I don't think we really think about this very much, like the extent to which the sort of patient, this consumer-driven healthcare actually puts a lot of burden on the patient. And lastly, she says she's sort of encapsulating some of the feelings that people described to me during the study. She says, let me tell you something. As a black woman, life is hard as it is. And when you're by yourself, you're out there struggling to do things. So my thoughts were not to get rebellious. I didn't even think about that. And she goes on and she says, you know, she's talking again about the same experience, that she should have asked more questions. She should have done something. And she was very, she described this as being very burdensome for her. And so, again, this is just to make us think and to sort of linger on what these issues mean and how this actually affects people, in addition to the social determinants of health, what actually happens to people when they finally are able to reach a physician. And so just to wrap up, I think that what this suggests is that, you know, although middle-class African Americans are not as disadvantaged as other members of the black community, they continue to struggle against racial and gender stereotyping. I think we also need to really think about what socioeconomic status really means. How are we measuring it, and what does it mean to the lived experiences of people? And I think it also sort of touching on this idea of the connection between stress and health, in which these experiences, I think, are quite stressful for women, both outside of the healthcare encounter and during it. And so I think that points to stress as the potential mechanism through which these, you know, race, class, and gender potentially affect health. And in my further study, after I finish the dissertation and move on, I'm going to continue to explore how self-presentation and self-advocacy might be related to healthcare disparities, both in terms of and protective factors for women who feel that self-presentation is actually something positive, as well as for women who feel that it can be potentially burdensome. And that's it. Thank you.